from the number one sports site in the world.
Yahoo!
This is Yahoo Sports Radio.
YahooSportsRadio.com.
That's right, America. You're connected with Yahoo Sports Radio. And remember, you belong with us right here, the home of real sports fans.
Welcome, soccer fans. This is a first for Yahoo. This is the first podcast for our blog, FC Yahoo. We're calling it the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. We're coming to you from our offices here in Playa Vista, Los Angeles, California. And I have the pleasure of having two of our contributors in the blog here with me. To my left, we have Shahan Ahmed.
How you doing, Joe?
To my right, we have Alex Baker.
Hi, Joe. Nice to be here.
Both of them, hopefully you've read their expertise in our blog covering everything from the Premier League, especially, and La Liga and MLS. But today we're going to begin with the Copa del Rey and Barcelona's 7-0 thrashing of Valencia. What do we make of this, guys? Shahan, you watched the game. I was watching Premier League yesterday, watching Chelsea bore everyone to death, drawing with Watford. But take us through 7-0. Valencia apparently did not try to play with Barcelona and still got thrashed 7-0.
Yeah, so Valencia set up defensively. Gary Neville decided that laying back and absorbing pressure was the best way to go, which we've seen a lot of teams do with some success. In this case, they were absorbing pressure until the final third, which is a horrible strategy. I don't even know how it's possible to do that, but they did. So Barcelona would get in the final third, and we all know the playmakers that they have, Iniesta included, and they actually started Turan instead of Rakitic. And, I mean, Messi and Suarez had hat-tricks by, I think, what, minute 50? Ended up being 7-0, could have been 10-0, could have been 15-0. It was really, really one-sided. Valencia had no real shot. And obviously Gary Neville's on the hot seat, was asked if he would be fired if he would resign, whether he thinks he should be fired, so on and so forth. He apparently is staying there and seems pretty content with staying there. Well, content's not the right word. I think everybody saw the image of his face looking just so pale white as the score read 7-0 next to it. So, I mean, it all went really, really bad for Valencia. They haven't been good in the league anyway. The cup was pretty much all they had going for them. And now one leg's done, but there's no way they're going back to the Mestalla and beating Barcelona 7-0.
Alex, what's your take on the situation with Gary Neville at Valencia? How much time does he really have? I mean, they're already calling for his head.
Sure. I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to coach in La Liga any team other than Real Madrid, you're going to be handed a hammering by Barcelona at some point. So I don't necessarily think it's grounds to sack Gary Neville yet. I'd say, because what's going to happen then? You're firing two managers in the space of 3 months. Are things going to improve? I don't know. So I kind of feel like he should kind of be given a chance to finish out the season. They're 5 points out of the relegation zone right now. If he could get some results, get him back up the table, get him to safety, then maybe evaluate. Because this is a guy who's sort of being talked about in the frame for the next England manager job. So I think for Gary Neville, this is probably a learning curve. It's his first real big appointment. He was doing great as a pundit. He's been a legendary defender. He's been a good assistant manager for England. But I just think if you make being hammered by Barcelona a prerequisite for firing a coach, you're going to fire a lot of coaches in leagues all over Europe.
But the optics look really bad. I mean, we all remember the first match he was given. You know, he had the club. He opted not to go to the sidelines because he didn't quite have the rapport with the players yet. They were playing Barcelona. The team drew 1-1 with the interim manager.
Sure.
And, I mean, what we've seen or what's kind of been coming out is that he doesn't speak Spanish. That's kind of
That's a
big
problem.
Deal. Yeah. And you're talking about staving off relegation. I mean, it's Valencia. That's usually a Champions League team in Spain. So, you know, that's not the conversation they should be having. Granted, they've already fired a manager this year. But, I mean, the problem seems to be, I would imagine, because I don't think he unbelievably just forgot how to you know, strategize in football or all his experience went out the window. I think the problem is probably language.
There's a communication gap.
Yeah, sure, if you don't speak the same language as your players, it's kind of a problem.
And if you
you're
speak Spanish in a Manchester accent, I don't even know how that is going to sound. So maybe he needs a better translator. Maybe something is getting lost in between.
You know who's available is Jose, and he has...
he started off as a translator.
Exactly.
He's looking for a job. Yeah.
I think Neville should be praised for taking the risk of going to Spain, trying. You don't see any player, English players or coaches, really going outside the country these days like they used to.
David Moyes
recently. We know how that went. But well, let's talk about more about Barca. I mean, we've got Champions League fixtures coming up, a round of 16. Are they still the clear-cut favorites? All indications point to them. Like,
yeah,
I can't see
yeah.
anyone else knocking them off. They would have to play, you know, well below their top level for someone to even have the chance of knocking them out of the Champions League. Maybe
it's not just the Champions League. That's the thing with this Copa del Rey win. They're pretty much into the final. You'd assume that. I mean, they're going to be heavy favorites in that competition. You look at La Liga, they're 3 points clear of Atletico, who they just, you know, beat. It was kind of a red card fest and got ruined, but they beat them. They have a game in hand over there as well because of the Club World Cup stuff over in December. So you look at the way it's setting up, they could genuinely do the double treble, which I'm coining that term. I'm not sure if
double
it really
treble.
Exists.
But nice. You better get that trademark.
Yeah. You know, if I've learned anything, trademark everything. in any case, I mean, genuinely, when you look at it, and then the biggest competition for Barca has been Bayern, you know, setting up as Bayern. And with the news about Pep going to Man City, some of the rumblings about, you know, some of the discontent in the locker room might actually have some, you know, might have some legs. So a manager on the way out, obviously Bayern would love it to be a Jupp Heynckes situation where they know he's retired. In that case, he was retiring at the end of the year, so they kind of did it for the old Kipper. In this case, it's a little different because he's going to Man City, so, you know, it's not like he can't still manage. He's a young guy. He's done a lot for the club, so a lot of the players, you know, obviously have allegiances with him. However, he is a manager on the way out. That could kind of distract, but even more than Barcelona, Bayern expects to do the domestic double without thinking twice. I mean, that Bundesliga doesn't even exist for them. It's just a training session, really.
Well, let's talk about Pep. I mean, he dominated the headlines earlier this week when it came out, kind of awkwardly. At the end of Manuel Pellegrini's press conference, he mentioned that his contract will not be renewed or extended with Manchester City. And interestingly enough, moments later, it was announced finally, the worst kept secret in world soccer, that Pep Guardiola is coming to Manchester City. He is leaving Bayern. Just what are the expectations for someone like Pep? Obviously, City's won the league, but realistically, how is he going to change Manchester City? What does he bring? There's been a lot of talk about what he might do in the transfer window, but he's going to have an impact that I think we don't really know what that might be just yet.
Sure. I think Pep's been brought to City. You know, they've won the title a couple times now, but I think really his mandate is going to be to win the Champions League. And I think he's going to give City that kind of European pedigree, and people have talked a lot about the week about the changing balance of power in Manchester, and the fact that he took City over United is kind of an endorsement of City, as this is maybe we have to start thinking of them as a great club in the same way. And if they win the Champions League under Pep, then I think they might be elevated to that sort of Real Madrid, Barca, Bayern status. And you know what Guardiola has done, and people criticize him, they say, well, why didn't you go for a challenge? But he comes in, he takes good teams, and he makes them virtually unbeatable. And he's done it with Barca. He's done it with Bayern. And I think it could be a game changer for City. And with the kind of money he's going to have, I think it's going to be pretty difficult in the coming seasons for other teams.
Shahan, who do you think Pep could lure to Man City. We know that Yaya Toure is not going to be around there anytime soon.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is that, you know, when he came to Bayern, he brought in Thiago, obviously, and that was kind of one of the main keys to redoing the culture at Bayern, who had just won the treble. So when you look at Yaya, that's kind of been the problem with Man City. In the years where they have the Africa Cup of Nations, they seem to not win the title. When he's around, his inconsistencies are what make them successful or unsuccessful. And that's kind of one of the things where you know that Pep is going to kind of eliminate that factor. It's not going to be a reliance on him. Who's he going to bring? To be honest with you, I think he's going to make a heavy play for Pogba. Why wouldn't you? He's the best midfielder in the world. Juve,
just the name I was thinking.
It's been, you know, talked about him leaving Juve for a couple of years now. Juve's managed to hold on to him. He's doing really well there. I mean, Juve is doing really well. But at some point, it was basically go to Barca. And if you don't go to Barca, Pep is pretty much Barca wherever he goes. So it's essentially Barca 1A. And, I mean, the biggest name, obviously, that comes up is, can he get Messi to the Premier League?
Well, let's talk about that. What are the chances? Because, look, Pep is joining all of his friends from Barca. I mean, City's being run essentially by the old guard at Barca. Is it really likely that Pep could bring
not Messi likely, to, but it's likely. It's not. I wouldn't say likely, but it's not out of the question, yes. Which is insane. Like no one has really ever considered. Oh, he could go to Manchester City. It's not even that he's going to the Premier League. It's that he's going to Man City. If he's going, that's the more likely to happen than him going to United, to Arsenal, Liverpool, any of the traditional clubs, so to speak. Man City is one step above those clubs in many respects now, and that's because of Pep coming in. The second he comes in, they've essentially made it from that standpoint. Obviously, the goal is to win the Champions League. If he wins the Champions League, then they've hit that level. I mean, you know, they've won the FA Cup. They've won the league a couple times now. The real goal has to be success in Europe, and we're kind of seeing those inroads. I mean, you'd expect them to make it to the quarterfinals this time around. I think they're playing Dynamo Kiev. They should be able to get by them. And I think ultimately the main goal for Pep is the same goal it was at Bayern, Barcelona, wherever. It's European dominance and being the best team on the continent. And at City, that doesn't change because you have just the same type of resources he had at Bayern. If anything, it's more a more competitive league. But what we're seeing this year is that maybe it's not going to be that competitive a league if you have the right man in place because, you know, Man United seems to be going back and forth. They're not quite at their strength. You look at Arsenal. Yes, they've been due for like 4 years now. Every time they're on the doorstep, they seem to stumble. Chelsea, you know, just got rid of Mourinho. Hiddink's probably going to be replaced. They're going to be kind of in a transition as well. So with Pep coming in and having the resources, he might be able to run away with the league before anyone even realizes that the league is on.
Well, Jurgen Klopp did say this week, you know, Pep should not expect to come in and dominate. He did say the Premier League is very different from the La Liga and from the Bundesliga. And there's always the thought of could Messi, you know, deal with
a cold night at Stoke.
at Stoke.
Yeah.
I would say yes to that, by the way. In case anyone's wondering, I think
Ryan
could.
Shawcross would take a couple of
maybe so
chances.
But you know, I wouldn't say that Messi coming is likely, but I would say the unthinkable has just become a bit more thinkable. You know, imagine a scenario where Barca wins the Champions League again this year. That would be what four or five Champions Leagues for Messi at Barca. You know, he might get a little bit. Maybe the guy's going to want a new challenge at some point, and Pep has a certain. I think he has Messi's ear. He might be able to say, you know, Leo, this is, do you want to, maybe you need to do this. Maybe you need to do something new.
I think it's more related to the tax stuff. The tax
stuff.
Okay.
And
the
I was going to bring that up.
I mean, if the tax stuff keeps dragging on and, you know, he's looking at getting, not just fine, but he's getting made an example of right now in a country where he's pretty much, you know, plied his trade his entire life, essentially. And to the response has been, we might throw you in jail.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, man, I want to get out of town. And we've seen it in the past where people have left. And, you know, I think that might be one of those things where it's like, okay, I've done everything. it's not necessarily just a challenge on the football field, but why do I need to put up with this stuff anymore?
Yeah, that too.
And, you know, the other option is what? Go to Italy, which isn't really that appealing right now.
PSG.
I mean, PSG, I guess, but PSG is kind of one of those same things. It's like, I guess you could go to Bayern. PSG and Bayern, to me, at this point, are essentially you're playing domestic football for fun, and then you just try and win in the Champions League. That's right. Pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a junta.
Well, I guess Barca's not that different, but to some extent, you know, at least they have one challenger or two challengers.
One and a half.
Yeah. Well, two on, you know, on most days, I guess you would say, even though, that Neymar, Messi, Suarez trio, genuinely, I believe, is the best attacking trio in the history of the game. I don't think it's ever been that good, especially considering the ages those guys are at.
I think you were the first one on our blogging crew to anoint that, at least the possibility of it, this being, this trident being the best ever. I think now we know just how great it is. I mean, how much further can they go? I mean, it's the symbiotic relationship already between these three, and then with Iniesta, you know, still being a factor. It really is incredible to see how they're able just to tear apart anything that's put before them.
Oh, yeah, and you know, I was lucky enough to be at Camp Nou at the start of the season, and I got to go, you know, I was watching a match, and the pregame routine between Messi and Neymar is phenomenal. They essentially, on the volley, just hit 40-yard passes back and forth up and down the field on the volley. The ball never hits the ground. They go, they grab it, ball comes at them, they juggle it a couple of times, hit a volley right back. The skill level involved with these guys is insane. I mean, Suarez is probably the best number nine in the world, and you know, Lewandowski had that little uptick for a little bit, and he's a great, great player, but Suarez, you would still take. I mean, Suarez nearly won the Premier League on his own, essentially. Okay, Gerrard had a pretty good season that year, but man, Suarez, I mean, he should have broken the Premier League scoring record that year. He pretty much put them on their back, up on his back, and that's the guy who was like option three, or was you know, presented as option number three on that attacking trio. But it's phenomenal. There's just those are three of the best players in the history of Uruguay, Argentina, and Brazil, respectively, and those are three phenomenal footballing nations. So to have three once-in-a-generation players from South America on one team at the same time in the prime of their careers, like, how do you beat that?
And the fact that they work for each other, not against each other. You know, you see what happens at Real Madrid when Gareth Bale or someone scores and Ronaldo gets visibly out of sorts about it. Whereas these three guys at Barca, they share, you know, Messi wins a penalty, he gives it to Neymar to take. You'd never see Ronaldo do that.
Yeah, no, it's, I would show up before the game, much like Steph Curry's pregame routine when he's shooting. I would show up at Camp Nou a couple hours before just to see these guys, you know, show off their skills.
Yeah, I've been privileged enough to see Steph Curry's pregame routine too. but... Yeah, it's honestly, I was in awe. I was just sitting there watching, going, how are these, like, I mean, I've played, so I understand how hard that is. You just can't do that type of stuff. But they were pretty much, you know, 40 yarders without any thought whatsoever. And that's not even, I mean, Messi can actually lay back and play intelligent passes, not have to do those slalom runs that he did when he was younger. He can actually extend his career and be effective having somebody like Neymar do those runs for him, essentially, and find, you know, the ball, switching the ball has become one of Messi's greatest assets this year. You really see him lay back on the right side a good amount, and he'll cut in just enough to ping that ball across, and it just changes the focus. And man, when you have somebody like Neymar who can take on defenders, and he's looking to put the ball into Suarez or find Messi or find Iniesta, man. You know, Xavi was always ridiculed for the back pass and kind of slowing it down a little bit. Iniesta doesn't do that in the least. He's Xavi with a more attacking mindset, and that's why Barcelona, that's the transition they essentially made when Enrique came in, and they kind of had that little bit of fight back and forth until it became essentially Iniesta's team where they attack more. That's why the goals keep flowing. It's not just that front three. It starts in the midfield, obviously, but it's, you know, they changed their mentality to be more of an attacking team rather than historically, you know, you think back to Spain where it was, we have to maintain possession. We want to limit the other team's chances. And that was the main thing. It was like, hey, if they can't get chances and they can't score, it doesn't matter. We're never going to lose. We're going to have our chances, but we're going to make sure they don't have any chances. And that was kind of the mentality. Now with Barca, it's, we're going to outscore you. You can't keep up. And it's fun to watch. It's great. I think this team is genuinely the greatest attacking team that we've ever seen and probably going to see for a long, long, long time.
It's terrible when you're someone like Gary Neville, though. we're gonna take a short break here with the first FC Yahoo Soccer podcast. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the Premier League fixtures on the weekend. Man City against Leicester City. And there's also what used to be a really big game, Chelsea and Manchester United on Super Bowl Sunday. So we'll be right back.
From the number one sports site in the world,
Yahoo!
This is Yahoo Sports Radio.
YahooSportsRadio.com.
That's right, America. You're connected with Yahoo Sports Radio. And remember, you belong with us right here, the home of real sports fans.
Welcome back to the first FC Yahoo Soccer podcast. We've covered a lot of good topics. I was remiss in not mentioning that we are launching our daily fantasy soccer game around the Premier League today. It should be today. So if you are a daily fantasy soccer player, please go to our daily fantasy soccer page. We'll have content from Scott Pianowski explaining our game in Roto Arcade. Hopefully, you'll be able to see his picks and my picks for the weekend. And just want to get that out of the way. So let's talk about the Premier League. We've got some big games, guys. At the top of the list is definitely Manchester City at home against surprise league leader Leicester City. Now, I don't think it's a surprise anymore. I think, Shahan, you wrote, it is time for all of us to finally come to the realization that Leicester City is not just a contender, but they might be very well be the favorite now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their schedule and the fact that they're not playing in any of the cup competitions, not playing in Europe, they have a huge leg up. And then, I mean, Mahrez and Vardy have been great, but they've had support in the midfield. You know, Robert Huth, a huge, huge addition for them when they brought him in just to get some Premier League experience.
Former Chelsea guy.
Also a former Stoke guy. So, but yeah, I mean, they really did a good job in terms of filling in those gaps. And, you know, Ranieri didn't get – everyone thought they'd be in a relegation struggle right now, especially after last year.
Another former Chelsea guy.
He didn't do nearly as well.
let's keep moving on.
But yeah, in any case, the thing with Leicester is that not only do they have really, really good players, but they, you know, they had that dip in form where they didn't, you know, after the Liverpool loss on Boxing Day, they went and, you know, Vardy had that operation. They couldn't really score goals, but they shored up at the back. They've only allowed one goal in their last six, two if you include that Liverpool game, because it was only a 1-0. And then, you know, you look at Vardy, he's got three in his last two. He seems to be firing again. The midfield, Conte looks like a great player that seemingly everyone missed on. Mark Albrighton, I remember when he came in with Aston Villa, and I remember he showed a lot of promise. And, you know, he's actually a Premier League player that they added to their team, got him on the cheap. People were over – all these guys are actually pretty darn good players. And that kind of gets lost in the Cinderella story or the Mahrez and Vardy, you know, narrative. But when you look at the actual team and you look around, you know, Christian Fuchs is another guy. Anyone who's watched Champions League football for the last decade has run into Fuchs plenty of time because his name's really fun to make fun of. You know, it's hard to miss that one. There've been so many puns made on that name. So, but in any case, with Schalke, he was a regular that played. So when you actually look at the balance of the team, there's experience there. They have players that can do the job, and then their scheduling is so much better off than all of their contenders. Plus, when you look at their head-to-head, I mean, you know, this weekend, obviously, they're playing City, and Aguero's on fire, but when these teams met back on, you know, the 29th, it was a 0-0. Even if Leicester, let's say, doesn't gets only one point or even doesn't get any points, they're still in position because they have an easier run-in from here to the end of the season. And, you know, no matter what you say, the Champions League is going to distract away from Arsenal, from Man City. I mean, Arsenal dropped a little bit. Even the Europa League is going to distract from United and Tottenham as well. And, you know, Tottenham's a legitimate contender as well currently. But the way you look at it, there's just no reason to discount Leicester in any capacity.
You know, Jamie Vardy, for me, is the story this season. I mean, that's an easy thing to say. But the way this team, I mean, the greater whole, the sum of all these parts, these disparate parts who have, like you mentioned, have been passed over for whatever reason. I mean, Gökhan Inler can't even get into get on the field. And he was one of their bigger signings in the summer.
Well, right? Ochoa, when he came on with Leicester, was like, oh, you know, last season, all those years ago, he came on, he was scoring goals, and like, oh, this guy could actually be pretty good. He can't get in the team. Okazaki's a, you know, underrated player. He's actually an international player. He's a good player. He can actually play. So when you actually look at the depth that they have, obviously, you know, at this point, I think finishing top four is not even a question, just based on the quality and the fixture list coming up. There's no way that this team, in my mind, is not playing Champions League football on the balance of what they've shown so far and, you know, what you see in the squad. That being said, you know, next year they're probably going to have to buy some players to compete on multiple fronts because they've been fortunate enough not to by getting knocked out early in the cup competitions domestically. So I think you might see some change, and there are going to be people obviously coming in for their big stars from this year. Vardy and Mahrez, I mean, they're going to have to fight off people to hold on to those two.
Alex, from what you've seen your time watching the Premier League, I mean, where does this Leicester story rank? It's of this Cinderella story of just surprise contenders.
Sure,
I mean, Blackburn won the league. But has there anything come close to this where they were battling to stay up?
Right.
And then
right.
Now they have a 3-point lead.
You know, Blackburn is the closest thing that comes to mind, but it's almost like Chelsea's season in reverse. Have you ever seen a Premier League leader start off so badly and a team that barely escaped relegation start off so well? It's a reverse of fortunes. And I don't think there's a lot of precedent for it, but I think it's probably going to become more common with the kind of money we're seeing going into the Premier League all across the league. You're seeing top players go into teams like Stoke. You're seeing big managers. Claudio Ranieri's got a pretty excellent pedigree as a manager. He would take a bottom Premier League team. So I think stories like this maybe haven't been that common, but I think we'll see more of them going forward, which, you know, as an Arsenal fan, it's a little bit of a jolt. But as a neutral who likes Premier League football, I think it's great for the league. I think it makes it interesting, and it's a fantastic story.
They obviously have a massive test in the first game of the weekend. That's a 7:45 Eastern kickoff for those who want to watch. But you can watch it on Yahoo Sports. We'll have the live stream via our friends at NBC Sports. They're going up against – Leicester's going up against City. You know, everyone has expected City, you know, eventually to win the league along with Arsenal and just – pretty much outright dismissing Leicester, what Leicester's been doing, expecting Leicester to finally fall off. You know, let's assess City right now. I mean, what are the reasons right now for City to overtake Leicester?
Well, Aguero, simple. I mean, I think across all competitions, he's got, six goals in his last four. He's just been pounding them in, carrying them, frankly, to 3 points or even 1 point. And that's kind of... They needed that, especially with De Bruyne going down now. They needed Aguero to start firing. How long he can stay healthy is pretty much how long City's title challenge stays healthy. However, with the Pep story, that kind of adds a wrinkle that City didn't really need. You know, Pellegrini generally is known as a likable guy. Players seem to like him, so it's not one of those get rid of this guy, I mean, I don't want to play for him. So that could work out to some extent, but... Whenever you're playing for somebody and you know he's not going to be around, there's less incentive to necessarily listen to every direction he provides you. So from that standpoint, I could see them losing focus from time to time and dropping points when they shouldn't. And, you know, this team hasn't been great away from home anyway all season. So at some point that's just bound to catch up to you, especially when you look over at Leicester and, man, they look good right now. They look like they're firing. And, you know, Vardy had that period where he went 7 games without scoring a goal. And you look at them on the other side, they're still 3 points clear. Arsenal seems to be dropping a little bit. And, you know, with Arsenal having Champions League with Barcelona, that's going to distract as well. It's just right now, I think City is a squad in transition because of the Pep news more than anything else. And, you know, as much as they have the talent, they obviously have the talent because they've spent more than enough money to get it. It's just one of those things where consistency and focus is kind of the little margin that could go out the window just because they are playing on different fronts and Pellegrini's on his way out.
Well, I also feel like they're favorites kind of by default, not because they've been that great, but because they've messed up less than the other teams. Chelsea's blown it. Arsenal's in the process of self-destructing. United are struggling. And City, they've been far from their, as good as they should be, but they're kind of in there because everyone else is worse.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, everyone's talking about Leicester's next 2 games coming up. Look at City's next 2 games coming up. They're playing Leicester and then Tottenham, who are probably the two hottest sides in the Premier League. Not probably, they are the two best teams right now based on form. And frankly, the two teams that I wrote about being title contenders that should be taken seriously. I mean, you don't, over the next 2 games, City's title challenge could frankly fall apart worse than Arsenal's did over 2 rounds. So, you know, Arsenal dropped from first to fourth over 2 rounds, genuinely. So you look at what's coming up, the next couple of weeks are going to be a lot of fun in the Premier League, and a lot could be decided really, really quickly.
Well, Shahan and I, we were the ones who picked Arsenal to finally win the Premier League.
You guys did?
Again, you can go ahead and look it
wow.
up.
So, to be fair, I think our competition picked Chelsea, so I think we may win on the balance because everybody else was like, oh, Chelsea. We went on the limb and said Arsenal.
I picked Chelsea, yeah.
Well, I picked Arsenal because of Petr Cech. I felt like his experience would mask, you know, some of the mistakes they normally or make, you know, correct some of the mistakes that normally would doom Arsenal in the games where they're not playing their best, where they're kind of leaking in goals, and next thing you know, they're chasing the game and, you know, Giroud's missing chances. I know that's a sensitive spot for you.
Sure.
But I mean, you know, I still think Arsenal is going to be a factor because when they're at, no one plays like them when they're at their best on the front foot attacking. I don't think anyone in the Premier League can stop them. But you being our resident in this room, resident Arsenal supporter, what is give fans reasons optimism why you think Arsenal can, at the end of the day, at the end of the end of the season, be on top?
I have two words: Alexis Sanchez. I think the fact that he's come back from injury is probably, you know, Wenger famously likes to say when players come back from injury, it's like a new signing, and so he uses that as an excuse to not make new signings, but I think in this case, he's the only player on that team who has consistently been able to change games on his own. I've defended Giroud, but he just misses so many chances. If he could play consistently at his best, he would be a world-class striker, but you just don't know who's going to show up. He'll have a fantastic run of games, then he'll just be utterly flat for the 3 games like he's been. Walcott's going through whole matches without even taking a single shot. So I think that Sanchez needs to get back to fitness. Sanchez needs to get back on form. And I think that's Arsenal's best chance of making a run and arresting this kind of decline that we've seen in the last month.
When I look at Arsenal, you know, I picked them to win the league, obviously, and a lot of that was with Petr Cech. It was also kind of on the pretense or the expectation that Arsene would finally sign just somebody he could use. And we laugh at that because we should laugh at that. He just doesn't do it. But, you know, looking in terms of just where they are in the season currently, yeah, Leicester's coming up in a couple of weeks, plus Leicester, Man City playing each other. And this weekend actually means that Arsenal, if they get 3 points, would pick up ground on one of those two, regardless of who it is. That's big for Arsenal. However, when you look at, you know, drawing Barcelona could be a gift as much as it's a curse.
Maybe.
Because really what they really should do, when you look at the, you know, the schedule, they should completely throw out that those two games. Because, I'm sorry, Arsenal's not beating Barcelona on their best day. I don't take them to beat them. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, on the heels of playing Barcelona in the first leg, they're at Old Trafford and playing against Manchester United. You need to get those points over there. Mm-hmm. And on the second leg, they follow up with the match at Everton at Goodison. You need to get points there as well. Those are two of their tougher matches left in the Premier League. I would completely tank the Champions League because, hey, round of 16, you go out again. That's kind of your MO anyway.
Yep.
In the past, though, you know, Arsene's kind of not really game planned for this type of stuff. He'll save his best players for the Champions League, even when it doesn't matter.
It's not in his DNA to do that.
It's true, but at some point, when you look at a league that's this close and this narrow, you need those points. And I think the only chance that I really give Arsenal right now, because they didn't do the big signings, they didn't get in the strikers they needed, is they kind of have to game plan the schedule. And when you look at the schedule, it just doesn't line up well for them to go and play Barcelona and then on the heels of it, go to Old Trafford, play Barcelona at Camp Nou, and come back and play at Everton, I think, 3 days later. Those are two fixtures that, honestly, those 6 points could be the difference between finishing fourth and finishing first, or finishing fifth and finishing first. I mean, imagine if that happens. I don't think it will. I think they're good enough on the balance and what they've shown. But in a season where your biggest competition has the edge on the fixture list, which is what Leicester essentially has from here to the end of the season, you have to kind of make up those margins somewhere. And, hey, I would tank the Champions League, personally.
I made that argument actually in a blog earlier in the season that when they were on the verge of being knocked out in the group stages, I thought that maybe that actually might be the best thing for Arsenal, because then they could focus. A, they might have been able to been in the Europa League, which they might have actually been able to win. And B, they could focus on the Premier League, because this is the best chance they've had to win the Premier League for a long time, and they may not get another chance like this. With Guardiola coming in, with Mourinho linked to United, with Klopp at Liverpool, who knows if Simeone comes into Chelsea. You know, I worry about Arsene Wenger. I would be the same if I were a Chelsea fan. But I just worry about Wenger being outclassed and then outspent, and then this is maybe his last best chance to win the Premier League.
You could buy Felipe Luis back at a premium again. It would just work out wonderfully.
We've got plenty of guys who want to get carded. Really, one guy wears number 19. So Arsenal currently is looking up, only because of goal differential, at their North London neighbor, Tottenham Hotspur. They're going to be at home to Watford. I said Jamie Vardy is a story this season, but if it wasn't for Jamie Vardy, Dele Alli, I think, would be the story of this season. He has been in fantastic form. He's scoring outrageous goals. You know, there's a lot of gets talked about with what Harry Kane has become for Spurs. But, you know, Mauricio Pochettino has been able to get a lot out of these young guys. What do we see Tottenham ending up? Definitely top four?
Definitely top four.
For sure?
I always hesitate to say definitely, well, because it's such Spurs. A close race. And then when you look... When
and
you,
it's Spurs.
It is. And
Spurs,
they,
Spurs being Spurs sometimes.
Well, they have to finish below Arsenal, right? That's kind of how it goes. I think that's the record is what? Since Arsene showed up, they've never finished above Arsenal. That's not right. Once. Which is pretty nuts. I mean, I'm almost positive that's correct. I might have to check, but we're mid-pod, so I won't. The thing with Spurs, you know, they kind of have a similar thing to Arsenal in the sense that they have a legitimate chance of winning the league, and their Europa League tie with Fiorentina could really screw them up a little bit. And it's one of those things where Pochettino doesn't like to do this because, he likes to play Lamela, and he likes to play guys that play the cup competitions, and he has certain squads, but he would really think hard about realizing that it's a Europa League and no one really, really cares about that competition whatsoever. So, yes, Dele Alli's been a great story. You know, seven goals, 4 assists in the Premier League only hint at how good this kid has really been and the technical ability involved in the goal of the season still, I think, even though there were a couple of stunners this weekend.
Yeah, the Kane one. The Vardy one.
Yeah, the Vardy one, I mean, was wonderful. But, man, that Dele Alli goal still, it's still battling over there. you know, Kane's been in incredible form. They don't really have much of a backup for him, but 15 goals, you're not going to complain with Harry Kane in the Premier League. You know, Christian Eriksen's kind of gotten overlooked, but he's still knocking in assists. He's still, I think, on the season, if I'm right, he's taken as many shots as Dele Alli. And, you know, he's getting in those attacking areas. He still has 8 assists and 4 goals this season, which just completely get overlooked and overshadowed. But he leads the team in assists. He is setting these guys up, and he's playing a lot better than he did earlier in the season. And, you know, Spurs don't really lose games. That's one of the things that, you know, they were on that unbeaten run, but they weren't in the top 4, and then they continued forward. And when you actually, like, look at their record, they rarely lose. They managed to either get a draw or get a win. And it's one of those things where they actually have fewer losses than Man City and Arsenal, if I'm correct in saying that. I think only Leicester, with 2 defeats in the Premier League, have fewer defeats. And, you know, Leicester, actually, I think I saw a stat that only Bayern and PSG have fewer defeats than Leicester in all of the European top 5 leagues. And Spurs are right there. That's the thing. So when you look at it on the balance of play, you know, I think I wrote about this in the article. They have the best defensive record,
which is incredible.
They don't give up many goals.
Yeah, they don't.
They've only given up 19.
Yeah, they haven't given up more than 2 goals in a match.
Yeah, and 19 is better than Chelsea had last year. You know, I went back and looked at the Premier League table when I was doing my last, you know, the last column, and it's really something that gets completely overlooked. But, you know, defenses do win championships. And they are solid in the back. And they've already played Leicester twice. I think it was a draw, and they lost by 1 goal. Both were very competitive games. They can play with anybody. They've shown that already this year. And, you know, one of the kids that's not getting talked about as much is Eric Dier, who's also in line to spend the next decade with England, along with, you know, Dele Alli and Harry Kane. And if these guys can all stay healthy, that's a great young core of players that they're bringing in through the ranks. That, honestly, you look at Spurs and they have as good of a squad as anyone in the Premier League right now. They're going as hot as anybody in the Premier League right now. That's why I say that Europa League, they might really benefit from just kind of tanking that and moving on. I know that tanking is not something that people talk about that much in this sport, but it's something that really... Europa League is the competition meant to tank. If there was one competition, you know, okay, you could say Carling Cup, but there you just play the kids and let them. But in the Europa League, there, I think that the round of 32, because they like reset, because all those Champions League third place finishers just automatically get plugged in. What's the point? What are you trying to get there?
Well, let's not forget that Spurs has a young American coming through, a young central defender, Cameron Carter Vickers, an 18-year-old who, you know, we have big hopes for. So they've definitely got a lot of talent. Look, Ryan Bailey is going to preview in a FC Yahoo post the Chelsea Man United game at 11 a.m. Eastern on Sunday. You know, we could talk about that, but please check out Ryan's preview. The biggest news with Chelsea this week was the John Terry talk, how he let everybody know that he was going to be moving on because Chelsea had decided not to renew or give him a new contract. Since then, I think Gus Hiddink and Chelsea have kind of backed off that harsh stance for... Really, you know, you say what you want about John Terry, but he is a legend at the club. He is the last really player to come through the Chelsea Academy who's actually stuck. You know, Ryan Bertrand, people bring up Ryan Bertrand making starts in the Champions League, but he's really the only one. And people have made fun of, you know, his slip in the Champions League final in Moscow against Man United. But really, he is how many times you can say the guy has kind of revitalized or rejuvenated his career, sure. Most recently under Jose Mourinho. How do you guys see this situation with John Terry? I mean,
you know, you would think if he's not ready to hang him up yet, which he says he's not, then he would seem like a prime candidate for a major league soccer designated player or a targeted allocation money by Probably a DP somewhere, though, I would think.
Yeah, the MLS All-Star team could just be the 2004 Chelsea. It's what, you got Drogba, Lampard.
It's just Ashley Cole.
Ashley Cole's coming over, yeah, too. I mean, he's probably, yeah, just calling up his old friends. They're like, hey, where are you guys playing this year? And they all say stateside, so that he's about to hop the flight and come over.
I love it how when there's an old Premier League star who's on his way out, everyone immediately links that player to MLS. You know, well, the league is trying to get away from this, yeah, retirement league rep. But
Sure.
Well, where else is he going to go is the question. Because he said he doesn't want to stay in the Premier League. You don't see him going to the Championship, obviously.
No, he's not going to go to Germany.
Exactly. He's not, like, Germany wouldn't work because, frankly, it's too fast-paced for him. He could go to Italy, but that hasn't really worked out for declining.
It's kind of worked out for Evra, I guess.
Well, Evra wasn't really. He's more of a speedster. When you look at Vidic, is probably a better example of what happens when. And Ashley Cole didn't really work out very well. So you look at, you know, aging stars that leave the Premier League that are defenders trying to go to Serie A. It doesn't quite work out either because it is more of a technical game. And, you know, Terry's been great. 18 years, a long time at one club. That's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And one of the moments you left out that I was trying to get in there was the knee in the back that got him red carded out of the final.
Oh.
So, I mean, he's had his moments, and he still celebrated like he played the match. So he showed up with shin guards and all.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, he is a great player, and some of the talk has wondered whether or not it's just kind of a ploy to get a new contract, is coming out with it. Because the timing's a little bit irregular. You know, why announce it now? Why not wait till the end of the season when you're actually out? Because Chelsea has this policy of only giving older players one-year contracts anyway. They've had that for some time. He knows the deal with that. So this might actually be a way that, hey, you know, we kind of have this unbeaten run going. There's instability. I'm going to take advantage of this and put some pressure on the club to actually possibly offer me a contract. Now, the club, even though has kind of backtracked on the initial reports that came out, did say, you know, they didn't seem like they were saying, oh, no, we've offered him anything. They said, we're going to revisit the conversation and, you know, the lines of communication are open. That can mean all types of things. But ultimately, I mean, it seems like it's time to move in a new direction anyway. It's not necessarily a bad thing for the club. It is kind of odd that he wouldn't hang around, but if he wants to play, there's really not very many places that make sense. He could go to China, and China is buying up players left and right.
They are spending some serious money.
Jackson Martinez, oh my lord.
Crazy.
Tell me how this works. How do you pay so much money for a guy over the summer, and he does not work out or play well, and then you actually make money on his sale?
Only in soccer.
Yeah. Only in China is more.
Well, Atletico have Chinese owners too, so yeah. I don't know. But I think, look, Chelsea's kind of done this before. When Lampard, they kind of showed him the door a bit unceremoniously too.
They
you know, you could be a club legend, but at the end of the day, soccer's a business. They got to move on. They've got to make money. They've got to get players in who are going to do the job. I think John Terry had a great season last year, but this season, I think we're seeing signs that his time as a dominant Premier League center back is running short. And I think, you know, MLS is a pretty viable option for a lot of these guys now, with the Italian league sort of in decline and MLS on the rise. A lot of people he knows are here. And, you know, we joke about how it is the 2004 Chelsea team, but I could see him here. I won't be surprised if he turns up in MLS next season.
If he does come, and there are plenty of, you know, brought it up, of a lot of his former teammates, people he used to play with, you know, LA Galaxy is at the forefront of that this off season.
Sure.
They brought in Ashley Cole for one.
Nigel
De Jong from AC Milan, and Jean Van Damme.
Right.
Jelly
Van Damme.
Jelly Van Damme.
Yelly.
Sorry.
Jelly would be the.
I don't even know the guy's name. we follow the Galaxy closely here, being in Los Angeles.
Sure.
You've written about how this is kind of a slippery slope with what the Galaxy is doing by bringing in these aging players. Now, granted, they're sensible buys. They're not. It's not DP money. Mm-hmm. You know, they're paying, you know, $500,000 each for a year for Cole and De Jong.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we make of what the, you know, Bruce Arena said he's been working on reshaping this team since their unexpected loss, the earliest loss I think the Galaxy have ever had in the MLS Cup playoffs.
Yeah, well, you know, the defense became a problem, and I think the Galaxy's decline last season kind of coincided with Gerard arriving, and I think Gerard unfairly has been blamed for a lot of that. But, you know, Gerard's not a defender. Gerard's not the one who's giving up goals. Maybe he's not tracking back as he should, and I think maybe that's part of the reason.
He's not.
Maybe that's why De Jong is there. If you have De Jong, you have a pure defensive midfielder, which frees Gerard up to go forward. You know, De Jong has that fear factor in the midfield. Ashley Cole, you and I aren't that hip on that signing. I wrote about how I thought it was a bad move. But I'll tell you, when I was at MLS Media Day, I spoke to all three of the Galaxy's designated players, Gerard, Keno, and Gio. And to a man, they were all very excited about Cole. So he didn't do a lot in Italy, but he's got a good pedigree. Maybe they know something we don't.
Which is surprising, because Robbie Rogers had actually become a, you know, MLS doesn't really care too much about fullbacks, essentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, Robbie Rogers had turned into a productive left back for the Galaxy.
Right. Now I guess he's going to be played on the right, though, which I'm told he has experience there, so maybe it'll pan out.
But really, that wasn't the issue. The issue with the Galaxy, and you know, I was there when the Portland Timbers season changed, when they put Darlington Nagbe in the middle, and they absolutely thrashed the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Largely because there's no one in the midfield to do Gerard's running for him.
Yeah.
There are giant spaces created when the Timbers were on the counterattack. It was a field day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How are you to expect you know, mid-30s Nigel Young to cover up?
He's 31.
But that, you know, these guys aren't going to be playing every game. Obviously, Arena's brought in a lot of players. He's brought back Mike McGee. The depth is what he is touting, is what is going to help the Galaxy. And they have a big CONCACAF Champions League game coming up against Santos Laguna.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So are they – is this a team that is back to being a legit, you know, MLS title contender? Or is it remains to be seen? There's so many
always are going to be a legit title contender for MLS. And I think that Bruce Arena is generally pretty savvy. And if there's a guy who can get these guys in line and make them into a functional team in this league, it's probably Bruce. You know, these signings, they might raise some eyebrows, but as I said, De Jong is only 31. I think he's a good pickup. I think he could probably walk into a Premier League team or another team in Italy. So I think that's a great buy for $500,000. Ashley Cole, again, I don't know how much of it is his personality that colors our opinion of him. Or, you know, is he that bad? It's hard to say, because he just didn't do that much when he was in Serie A. So I don't know.
Cashley Cole, you're talking
Cashley
about?
Cole, yeah. No one likes the guy. But
I think, well, Nigel de Jong's interesting. The only hesitation I would have with that, the price seems to make sense for this hesitation, obviously, is he's had some knee issues, and the injury history doesn't really bode well for someone, especially in a physical league like the MLS. So it's, you know, kind of wait and see with him, for me anyway. I think he definitely has quality, but he's not really a big guy. So even when you stick him in the middle, his work rate was more what defined his ability to have an impact. I think he's, what, 5'9", maybe 5'10"?
He's a little guy.
Yeah, he's never known as a big, you know, he's not a Matic-type player that kind of absorbs space with his size and kind of pushes guys around. It's more he's diving in for tackles, a lot of them really reckless. Historically, that's how he's kind of dominated the middle of the park. And for a guy who's had injury issues, that tends to kind of go away a little bit. You don't dive in as much. And for a guy who is defined by that role and doing that, his effectiveness could really, really, I mean, he could just not be the same guy he was when he was a world-class player or anything close to it. So it's kind of wait and see with him. And, you know, his time was declining when he was at Milan. So we'll see. I mean, it's all wait and see with him. But like I said, the price seems like they've managed it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that you can get these guys without having to give up a designated player spot, I guess it's worth rolling the dice on them, because clearly the Galaxy had to do something to shore up the defense. These are experienced defensive players.
And there's going to be serious transition because Omar Gonzalez, because of the MLS rules, they couldn't keep him. They had to ship him out to the Mexican League, and they also sent Juninho, who's been a crucial part of these title-winning teams for the Galaxy. And I was perfectly happy with just Sarvis and Juninho in midfield. I know.
I think most of us were.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But you know, this is what the Galaxy does. They are the marquee club of MLS, and as you pointed in your blog post, they're kind of becoming the NYC FC of the West. Yeah. Much to the chagrin of I think what we can speak for most Galaxy supporters. But look, Bruce Arena has the blueprint. No one's won more MLS Cups than him. He knows how to navigate. The convoluted, complicated rules of the MLS salary cap, and somehow it looks like he's put together a team that will once again compete for MLS Cup.
I think so.
So I think that's it, guys. I mean, this is it. This is we've come to the end of our first edition of the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Be sure to play our new daily fantasy game for the Premier League. And be sure to visit FC Yahoo. We'll have lots of coverage of the big fixtures on the weekend, especially Chelsea Man United, even though we didn't talk about it here. Check out Ryan Bailey's preview. And thanks, guys, for coming.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Joe.
See this again.
Yeah. See you soon. Thanks, guys.